May the words of my mouth and the meditations of all of our hearts be always acceptable to you, O God, our strength and our Redeemer. How wonderful to be preaching not only to you who are watching from home, but to a group of people here at Emmanuel. Progress. So wonderful. Have you ever wondered what it would have been like to have met Jesus face to face during his ministry on earth? Yeah? I have too. Would I have become a follower? This kind of opens up for me this whole thought experiment, because my embrace of him or my opposition to him would have had a lot to do with whatever station of life I had during that time. My chances of becoming a follower of Jesus increase as I imagine myself disenfranchised, more on the margins. Someone maybe with not much to lose. These are the people that understood Jesus' message most readily, and they're the ones who more easily let their lives be transformed by him. They became his followers, his disciples. In today's gospel, Jesus sends out some of these followers to do the work that he's been doing. Now, this adds a whole new dimension to my thought experiment, because now I have to imagine what it would have been like to have lived in that time and to hear Jesus' message, not through Jesus, but through one of his disciples. Maybe I would have heard of somebody named Jesus who was teaching and healing, and I'm intrigued if I'm back in that day. But instead of meeting him, I'm meeting one of these folks who represent him, one of the people who have his message. But it's not Jesus. And I can wonder if I can leave my sense of entitlement behind so that I don't let that sway me and let me bristle at learning from a mere trainee. Perhaps my chances of being a follower are diminishing rapidly. So much for my thought experiment. Funny enough, though, I don't have to imagine myself in another century to wonder what it would be like to hear Jesus' message coming from other followers, because that's the boat that we're always in. The incarnation of Jesus in our midst is the presence of each other, with all of our different ideas and opinions. In these times, Jesus uses us in our voices to do his work. But that raises a lot of questions. As we hear the voices around us, how do we decide which ones to listen to? Which ones to reject? Say, that's not Jesus. When do we know that a fellow human being is conveying some new dimension or illustration of Jesus' teachings? In our gospel today, Jesus distills his message for his disciples to a simple phrase. He says to announce that the kingdom of heaven has drawn near. The kingdom of heaven is also called the reign of God, and it's a system where the ways of God govern our actions instead of human laws and power structures. It's sometimes described as a kind of upside-down world where the poor are exalted, the prisoners are set free, the sick are made well, the rich and powerful sent away empty. Which means that when we hear people crying out for justice, begging for mercy, calling out unrighteous behavior, asking for us to wake up, imagining a world that is upside down, saying the system has got to change, then we should pay close attention. Because these things sound like Jesus. If these words make us uncomfortable, maybe that's a spiritual cue that we should pay extra close attention. The kingdom of God draws near. These might be the moments where we can hear the fresh message of Jesus come to us from other people who understand something that we don't. If we're going to put ourselves in today's gospel story, and that's always a good thing to do, to put yourself in the story, but let's not rush to identify with the disciples too fast, the ones who are being sent, the ones who understand the message. Sometimes we're the disciples being sent forth by Jesus to announce the reign of God, and sometimes we're the lost sheep that Jesus mentions, the ones who need to find their way. At the current moment in our nation's history, many of us white people are realizing that when it comes to truly understanding how racist our society is, we have been lost sheep. We are lost sheep. We white people have been so privileged and so ignorant of that privilege that we couldn't see. We wouldn't see. We couldn't hear. We wouldn't hear. And now there's a great outcry, a great upheaval. The outrage in response to the murder of George Floyd has pushed us past a tipping point. There's some good news that has come from it. A recent survey in the New York Times reports that support for the opinions and positions of the Black Lives Matter movement has grown as much in the last 2 weeks. It's grown as much in the last 2 weeks as it has grown in the past 2 years, which means that maybe now many of us are beginning to see, beginning to hear, starting to wake up. This is progress, but it comes at a heartbreaking cost. The cost of the stolen lives of George Floyd, Breonna Taylor, Ahmaud Arbery, and millions, millions of others in our 400-year history of slavery and its devastating and ongoing aftermath. Now at this time, the task is to stay awake. If we're awake, we will see how oppressive the system around us is. If we're wide awake, we will look around at the reality in this country. And we'll understand why white people are being asked to acknowledge the privileges that the system creates and protects for white people. We're being asked to give up our white privilege, to make way for a more equitable system where everyone has an equal chance at a thriving life of well-being in America. And the very first step that we can all take is just to begin to acknowledge that this white privilege is there, that it's a real thing. And it's okay if this makes us nervous or uncomfortable, defensive. That's part of the system. These are natural reactions that we can learn to push through. These are signs that God is ready to transform in us what has been deformed by the system of racism. For those of us who are white liberals, perhaps one of the most terrifying things that we're being asked to realize is that we still say and do and think things that are racist. The writer Ibram X. Kendi tries to give us some breathing room on this subject. There's a book called How to Be an Anti-Racist. He says the term racist is not pejorative. It's not the worst word in the English language. It's not the equivalent of a slur. It is descriptive, he says. And the only way to undo racism is to consistently identify it and describe it and then dismantle it. So we have to call it out. We have to notice it. We can relax a little if we stop being so afraid of this word. It's the right word to use, to describe, not to shame or punish. The invitation is to stay awake so that we can begin to notice at deeper and deeper levels how racism still operates in us. And then we identify it and we offer it up for healing. I want to imagine a world where we can be in conversation with trusted others and say, I think what I said might have been kind of racist. There it went. There it is. Or to say to each other, was that kind of racist? And to not be so clenched, to have it be more like the awkwardness of like, yeah, I think you have some lettuce in your teeth. To normalize it as something that tragically is normal for this oppressive, corrupt culture that we live in, but we're trying to change that. We're trying to bring in the reign of God. This is the work of being anti-racist in this particular context. And it means, being anti-racist means to commit to actively dismantling this system of oppression. It's a commitment to bring in the reign of God through this way. Jesus sent his disciples to cure illness. This is a national illness that we have, and we have to cure it. And we cure it by saying, oh, there it is. And then we treat it. Treat it with love and compassion. God's transformation, healing. And being anti-racist is not a fixed identity. White anti-racists will still fall into racism. We're just people who commit to working on this problem throughout our lives, through ongoing practice, through self-awareness, through vigilance. Now, it's a lot of work. It's a lifetime of work. A lifetime of work. A lifetime of toil. And it's Jesus' work. Maybe it's exhausting at times. It's hard to give up perks and benefits. That's okay. In the gospel today, Jesus says, the harvest is plentiful, but the laborers are few. Jesus is always asking us to let go, to give up the life we now have, and to embrace the life he's guiding us to. He asks us to toil to bring in the reign of God on earth, to establish the beloved community of love and compassion. We can do that work in the streets, and we can do that work inside of ourselves in response to the messages that we're hearing from the streets, where so many of God's good people are shouting out the liberating news of God's reign. This is a difficult moment. God is always present in such moments, even if it doesn't feel like it. From the cross, Jesus cried out, my God, why have you forsaken me? It didn't feel to him like God was there. And now that same cross that he was on, an instrument of torture and death, what is it to us now? It's our revered symbol of our faith, sacred, beautiful. With that in mind, how the cross transforms from instrument of torture to something beautiful to us. With that in mind, consider now what it means today to take a knee. The cruel and hateful knee that squeezed the life out of George Floyd has become subverted into a redeeming act of humble solidarity. Amidst the chaos and destruction, we now see the beautiful act of some police officers taking a knee with protesters. When horror turns to beauty, that's God. That's the cross. That's where the love flows in. That's where new life begins. May we say yes to this new life, clearing out our minds and our hearts, opening our eyes and our ears so that we may perceive God's beautiful work around us and in us, if we'll only just consent to it.